Let me welcome our speaker tonight, Joey from Wilkes-Barre.
Thank you. I'm Joey Marchkaitis, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Joey.
I'd like to first thank this group for having me here tonight. I've been to this group, I don't know, a few years ago on a couple occasions. I like being outside, breathing in fresh air out in the country. It's great. And thanks to Jeff for asking me to be here. And also thanks for yelling at me for smoking at the first four tables earlier. But no, I have no script on what I'm going to say tonight. I have no clue what I'm going to say. I prayed when I woke up this morning. I prayed just sitting there a few minutes ago, and whatever God sees fit for me to say, I'll say. You know, the best thing I can do is just be honest and open with you and share my experience with you, because that's all I got. Everybody in this room right here, right now, up to this moment, has an experience in life. Maybe an AA, hopefully an AA, and also not being an AA. And it's the truth because it's happened, you know, and you can always share that with somebody else, whether you got a day sober or whether you got 30 years sober. It's your experience, and you can go share it with somebody and help somebody. Two main things I can tell you tonight. One is Alcoholics Anonymous works. That's 100%. That's the truth. And sorry. Sorry about that.
Downfall to being outside.
And secondly, I'm not perfect. I'm far from perfect. I make a ton of mistakes sober. Just because I quit drinking doesn't make me perfect or better than, or I'm still a mess sometimes. You know, I still play God a lot. I still get angry. I'm impatient with drivers. I get fearful. You know, most days you follow me around, you'd say, wow, man, his actions are pretty damn good. He goes to work every day. He's going to AA. He's helping people. He's being there for his family. But if you were able to listen to some of my thoughts on a daily basis, you'd be like, guy's out of his friggin' mind. You know, like, my head is crazy sometimes, you know, and that's what these principles are there for. You know, first of all, when I first got here, to get me to some power, and I choose to call that power God, because it's simple just to say God, whatever you choose to call it, that's great, you know. And and these principles help me get back to God, because I'm not always in touch with God. I'm not always having a great day. I'm not always in the moment. You know, most times, actually, I'm probably not in the moment. I'm thinking about myself or consuming myself and what I want to do and how I think this world should go. And, you know, and the truth is, it's going to go the way God wants it to go, unless I get in there and do my thing. And then and that brings on pain, you know, pain for me or pain for others. And really, in reality, I don't even have to get out there and do it. I can just think about it, and I suffer just the same, you know, playing God in my head. You know, like this past weekend, I had to work. You know, every ninth weekend it is where somebody's on call, and it was my weekend, and I wasn't happy. You know, I don't like working on Saturday and Sunday. And there's this music festival up north, up in Scranton, called Peach Fest, and I've gone there every year so far. And I probably could have switched with somebody and got a different weekend, but I got a lot of stuff going on the next several months on weekends, so I just said, I'll work, whatever, I won't go. And you know, and I'm at work, and I'm just thinking about it. Like, everybody's at this music concert having fun, and here I am stuck working, like, till 11 o'clock on Saturday night, you know. And get out of work yesterday at 5:30, I'm like, screw it, I'm going. You know, I got in for free. I was in the 11th row, you know, watching some good bands. Not the whole thing, but a couple bands, you know. So God's plan is not always my plan, is what I'm getting at, you know. But if you're new here, welcome. I know what I can remember when I got here. Actually, I should say my sobriety date is June 16, 2008. It's a day I did not plan on getting sober. It's not a day where I said I'm going to quit drinking for good and all, and I'm going to get on with this thing. I'd done that many times before and failed because I was trying to do it on my own. That simple. my home group's the Rule 62. We meet out in Lake Silkworth, Pennsylvania, Tuesday nights at 7:30. If you're ever in the area, I'm willing to give my number to anybody under this pavilion or outside the pavilion. Come join us. You know, and as I mentioned earlier, we're doing that History and Traditions cookout in September, and that's open to everybody. So anyway, yeah, a little bit about how I got to AA. I'm not going to focus a lot on that. If you're sitting in this room, you got here. You know how you got here, you know. My thing is, when I got here, though, I didn't know anything. I mean, I still don't know a lot, but I didn't understand or know a lot of things. You know, I correlated getting drunk with being happy, you know. I honestly did not understand the concept of this physical allergy they talk about in the doctor's opinion. that once I have one drink, I'm going to have many, many, many drinks. I didn't get that. You know, I just thought I'd like to drink. You know, and as far as quitting drinking, I thought, you know, I could quit if I wanted to. I just don't want to. I thought that for a long time until I really tried to quit and I couldn't. And those are two components of this whole thing. You know, once I start drinking or smoking crack or doing whatever, I don't stop. I keep going. I don't take two drinks and I'm content. I put the coaster on the mug and walk out and go home and cut the grass and what, you know, meet life's responsibilities. I just don't do that. And once I do stop, because not for long periods, but I've quit drinking for, you know, a couple days, a couple weeks at tops, you know, on my own. You know, I always pick up again, no matter what. No matter what consequences I faced, you know, I almost die, I'm doing the same thing a couple weeks later. That happens every time until I get here. You know, had I been able to quit drinking on my own and been content, I don't need to be happy all the time, just be okay some of the time, I would not be here. You'd have another speaker tonight. You know, I did not want to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. It was not my plan, I tell you. And I had a lot of fun drinking for a lot of time, you know, because it's what it did for me. You know, and I didn't understand that either. You know, my whole life, you know, good, well-meaning people were telling me, you know, you got to quit drinking. It's not getting you anywhere in life. You know, I remember I really started getting going, like, really full in fifth gear of drinking when I went away to college when I was 18. And I remember one of my friends, Brennan, he came to me and said, man, you keep drinking like this, you're going to die. I'm like, what are you talking about, man? We're all here. We're having a good time. Like, I don't get it, you know. But he saw things then, and maybe God sent him then. I don't know. I'm sure he did. You know, but they didn't get it. You know, you take away the drink from a guy like me or probably anybody in this room, you know, it's life sucks really bad, you know, because I got nothing to fix this. You know, when I drank, it gave me relief. It gave me freedom for myself, you know, allowed me, you know, say this was a party tonight and I know very few people here. You know, I would have walked in. I would have been scared. Say I walked in this part, say it was a party. I walked in here sober. I would have been scared to death. I would have been trembling. I wouldn't let you know that. I would have a smile on my face, but I'd be afraid to talk to girls. I would just sit over in the corner by myself, you know, or play on my phone, look like I was doing something. But you know, you take me to the keg or the liquor bar or whatever, and I start drinking, all of a sudden, I'm good. I could talk to girls. I'll run around, ask everybody if they got something I need, you know, like that's how it took me out of my shell, you know, allowed me to come out and play, allowed me to be okay and happy and content and peaceful. You know, all that fear that consumed me my whole life just went away temporarily. You know, it was what it did for me. It was my solution. And I didn't know that. I didn't know that until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. Because it treated this spiritual malady that I have. I still have it today. You know, and I didn't understand any of this till I got here. You know, however, I did know there was something wrong with me even as a child. You know, and that's how I know that alcohol did not cause alcoholism. I had alcoholism as a child. You know, in the big book, it defines alcoholism as a fatal malady. It's accompanied by these physical and mental conditions. You know, that's the true problem, is it dwells with inside me. You know, and that's what alcohol did for a long time. It treated that malady. Allowed me to be okay. Now, don't get me wrong. While I'm out there, and this is my experience, when I'm out there drinking and stuff, I'm not a responsible human being. I'm not the guy that goes to work every day, meets life's responsibilities, shows up for dates, shows up for family events. You know, they fall to the wayside to drinking. And I can honestly tell you, it's not that I don't care. It's not that I don't love my family. It's not that I don't care about my job. It's when I start drinking that takes precedent over anything that might be going on in my life. You know, it's that powerful. You know, and I don't know this at the time. But like I said, it was a lot of fun for a lot of time. And my experience is I'm in and out of my parents' house, asking them for money all the time. And even this whole idea, this guy Jay took me through these steps, showed me these spiritual principles. You know, he kept saying, you know, playing God, that's the problem, playing God, playing God. And I didn't know what he meant, really. But then I thought, I can, you know, and I tell this to the people, the folks I sponsor, you know, whenever I'm sharing my experience with you, relate it to your experience, you know. And I was able to think back, like, all these times, like, you know, I'd call my sisters own a small pizza business, and I'd call them and I'd ask them for money. I didn't call them up and was like, hey, give me some money. Like, I called them up. I'm sweet. I'm nice. I'm kind. I'm at you. How are you doing? You know, what's going on? You know, by the way, can you send me a couple $100s? You know, like, that's what I do. You know, I'm trying to direct and control the world and get people to do what I want them to do to benefit me, you know. And this guy, Jay, told me, he's like, you're selfish. I'm like, I'm not selfish, you know, but I didn't really know what it meant. To me, selfish was, okay, I have a 30-pack of Budweiser and you ask me for a beer, I say no. Now, see, if I have a 30-pack of Budweiser, you ask me for a beer, I'm going to give you a beer, you know, because I want you to like me. See, the biggest problem I had my whole life was I had a low self-esteem and I was in constant fear about what you thought about me. So if I can just, at least if I can just believe that you, that I had your approval, I was okay. See what I mean? And also when that beer's gone, you're going to get more. Like, I always have some kind of motive on what I'm doing. You know, and if you want to break my first four step down in a nutshell, it was low self-esteem, and I was in constant fear of what people thought about me. And I would do anything to get your approval, anything, you know, because I had no self-esteem. And I can remember this, like, and this guy Jay started talking about, like, you know, are you, he didn't tell me I had to believe in a power. He never said that. He said, are you willing to entertain the thought that maybe there's something greater than you out there? He didn't tell me I had to believe in anything, and I kept saying no, I don't believe in anything. But I did. It's, you know, that was a lie too, because I did believe in something. I don't know if I formulated these ideas on my own or if somebody told them to me in a church, because I went to church when I was a kid. But I believed that God was punishing, you know, and I didn't realize at that time that my life was my fault, you see. And I can remember this. I was like 7 years old, 8 years old. I was a child. And I remember I was getting a bath, and I still do. I have these long, skinny arms. I had these big hands. I had these big ears, a little gut. And I'm like, you know, this is a thought I had. I said, God took all the leftover parts and put me together. That's how much God cares about me and God wants me. Like, this is what I'm thinking at 7 or 8 years old, you know. And I can remember going to bed at night. You know, my parents would put me to sleep, and I'd go in my bedroom, and they would turn out the lights, and I would just get up, and I'd just start rocking back and forth. Like, there's something wrong, and I don't know what it is. And it's that malady. This is going on as a child. You know, this has nothing to do with alcohol. I didn't really know what alcohol was at that point in time. You know, it's a spiritual malady. You know, it's telling me I'm less than. It's telling me there's something wrong, like impending doom in my gut. You know, it's 7 years old. You know, so the first time I got drunk, man, I can remember I was this girl's house. Her parents went away, and these guys busted in the liquor cabinet, and they start pouring shots. I'm like, sure. Boom, boom, boom. All of a sudden, I was like, wow, this is great. This is absolutely great. You know, I never felt like this in my life. You know, and I don't remember if I made a conscious decision at that point to drink every day or drink as much as possible, but I knew, like, I wanted that feeling. That feeling was wonderful. That feeling was great. Nothing in this planet has ever made me felt like that. You know? So I didn't start drinking each and every day right from the gate. Like, this is just my experience. But I drank when I could. I drank on weekends. Whatever, you know. And when I did drink, though, I was the guy that was passing out, blacking out, falling over. Like, there was other people around, you know, they'd drink a couple, get buzzed. I mean, I would just, drink as much as possible. And let's go get more. Let's figure out how we get more. You know, more and more and more. You know. And I mean, drugs are part of my story, too. I won't get too much into it. I found this, and I found that, and I found this, and I found that. You know, just keep it that simple. You know, and it's the same concept. Once I start doing that stuff, I don't stop. You know, and but I can remember this. I went to school at Shippensburg, Pennsylvania. It's one of the schools I went to. And I can remember at one point, you know, I had this fridge in my room, had my, you know, my beer in there. And I can remember waking up and drinking and not feeling much. You know, physically, I can feel it. But it wasn't no longer taking away this mental anguish, this mental pain, the anxiety, the fear, the all this stuff going on inside my head, you know, it stopped working, you know. And if you've ever experienced that, it's a horrible place to be, you know. I can remember being, like, I love going to music festivals, concerts, that kind of stuff. I can remember being at this music festival, Gathering the Vibes, 2005. I'm there with my good friends, my family, some of my family. We have plenty of everything, let's put it at that. My favorite bands are playing. And I'm wasted. I'm smashed. I'm on everything I want to be on. And I'm still, my head's like, you're a scumbag. These people don't want you here. What, you know, like, that's what's going on. Like, it stopped working, you know. And the more I try, once it stops working, it don't work anymore. I could have done, and I've tried to get back to that good feeling, like that relief, like, okay, this ain't so bad anymore. You know, and that sucks. So prior to that, I was a party guy. I like being at parties. I like going to concerts. I like being at the bar. Wherever the action is, that's where I want to be. after that, I basically resigned to my mom's house, drinking and using by myself for the last couple of years. And that sucks. You know, just wanting to die, just basically existing, you know, living a worthless, selfish, disrespectable life, you know? And that sucks. You've been there. You're here. So I know you've been there. Nobody comes here because things are good. You know, at least I actually met one guy once. He said he came here, things weren't bad, and I saw him once and I never saw him again. You know, trust me, I don't come here because things are good. So anyway, like I said, I don't focus too much. I don't talk too much about how I got here because we're all here, right? You know how you got here. You're here. Ideally now, if you're not already sponsored, get a sponsor that's going to show you how to apply these principles in your life, and most importantly, share their experience with them to you, you know? And I've never seen a person in Alcoholics Anonymous come in here, get a sponsor, work through these 12 steps, go do commitments at the psych wards, the detoxes, the hospitals, all those kinds of things, go on and sponsor other people, show up for a home group, set up the place, you know, do speaking, do what they're asked, basically, and go back out. I have not seen it happen yet. Now, I've seen people do those things, and they stop doing them maybe as much as they used to, and they struggle, and I'm one of them. I've went unsponsored before. I've went without a home group. There's been stretches where I haven't gone to many meetings, you know, and I've suffered. I've suffered the consequences. Because what happens is, when I get away from you guys, and I get away from a sponsor, I start to get away from God, and I start to make foolish, what happens before I start making the foolish decisions is I get full of fear, and I start to get delusional and think things are happening that aren't happening, and then what could happen, and it's happened before, I start acting as though my delusions are true, because I think they're true, and people get hurt, you know, and usually when I'm like that, it's usually at the last moment when I'm in so much pain, I pick up the phone, like, what do I do now, you know, but what I can tell you is this. As far as these 12 steps go, as far as consistency goes, first step I've done pretty damn well. I haven't taken a drink since 2008. But other than that, I've nowhere near perfect. But when it comes to steps 11 and 12, I've been pretty consistent. You know, I've never told anybody I can't help them or won't help them. I've never, if I can do it, I'll never turn down a commitment, whether it's a speaking commitment or whatever. Help set up chairs for an event or whatever. I'll always do it if I can do it, you know. So that's what keeps me around, you know, because I don't believe anybody in this room or anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous is immune from never taking a drink again, you know. I've seen people that were on fire with this thing, doing it really well, you know, and they, you know, they stop doing it or they start cutting things short, and all of a sudden you don't see them again, you know. And unfortunately, some of them die. You know, I've been to some funerals, you know. I've sponsored guys that are dead, you know. That's the reality of the situation. I would imagine almost, probably if not everybody, almost everybody in this room knows somebody that either an Alcoholics Anonymous or somebody that's never even made it here that's died as a direct result of, you know, drug addiction, alcoholism, you know, and it sucks, but it's a reality and it's going to happen, you know. But like I said, I've been very, I don't want to say very, but I've been pretty consistent with 11 and 12, you know. But, what time we got? Sure, that's 5 minutes. Oh, lots of time. But anyway, in those last couple years after this stops working for me, and I'm saying, it's physically working. I can physically get drunk. It's taken a lot more. But it stops giving me that, whew, like this feeling like things will be okay, you know? And in March of 2008, I OD'd in my grandmother's driveway, nearly died, and, after that, I mean, as I've said other times, but this time, I'm done. Trust me, I'm done. And I meant it, you know? And that's enough to keep me, clean and sober for 3 weeks, that kind of pain. That kind of, you know, 3 weeks later, I'm doing the same thing. But God has a plan. I'm sure that there's always some kind of thing going on. And during that couple weeks, I can remember this, and I truly believe that God makes use of everything in this world, everything. My mom and my sister, my mom, first of all, she printed out this list of AA and NA meetings in the area. I just looked at them like, no way, not going, not happening. And her and my one sister, I have three younger sisters, they were, I remember this, I don't know what night it was, but they were walking out the door to go to an Al-Anon meeting. And I remember sitting on the couch, probably low as I have ever been in my life to that point, and me saying to myself, like, what a scumbag you are. You know, because of you, they're going to a meeting. So that guilt and shame actually drove me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I did not want to go to that meeting. I didn't think it was going to help me. I just went because I felt guilty. That's what got me there. Guilt and shame, remorse. So I go to this meeting. It was actually the home group I have now, the Rule 62. And I've actually left that group several times, not for any bad, like any issues or problems. I thought, you know, God took me other places. But every time I leave, I end up coming back. So I decided to quit trying to leave. Although we're talking about starting another group now, so I don't know. See what happens. But anyway, so I go to this meeting, and I have no idea what Alcoholics Anonymous is or what it's about, and my preconceived notions of what it was going to be a couple of old guys sitting around in a circle talking about their problems. That was nothing. Nobody told me that. That's just what I thought based on not knowing anything. So I go in this meeting, and to my amazement, first of all, I know people in the meeting, which blew my mind. People I used to party with. It's like, holy shit, you know. And there was this one guy, Timmy. And Timmy, I looked at the guy as far worse than me, you know, like when you're out there doing what you're doing and you can always point to that one person, be like, man, they're worse than me, you know, it kind of makes you feel good about what you're doing, or it makes you justify what you're doing. Like there's that one person, they're worse than me, and that was Timmy. So anyway, I go to this meeting. I don't know much of what was said, but I know they were talking about 12 steps, sponsorship, home group meetings, service work, you know, and they were talking about God. Then at the end of the meeting, you guys got up and you're holding hands saying the Lord's Prayer. I'm like, what's this? You know, I'm here I want to stop drinking and feel better. I don't want to pray or hold hands and Lord's Prayer. No, no, no. So I go to that meeting. I go back to that same meeting the following week, and it's a celebration meeting. And Timmy actually was celebrating at that time. He's a year at that time. You know, he had a year. And it blew my mind that this guy had a year sober. It blew my mind. And I believe, at least my belief is, that's why celebration meetings are very important. It's not about me or whoever's celebrating. It's truly to show that Alcoholics Anonymous works. So let me tell you why. I left that meeting that night. Well, before I left that meeting, I said to Timmy, I said, what do I have to do to ask somebody about being my sponsor? He said, you have to ask somebody, and he walked away. I'm like, well, I'm not doing that, you know? But what happened was, I still had ideas, see? And I think those are the things that are going to keep me out there, or at least keep me from in here, really, truly being in the middle of this thing. Because my idea was, I don't need to do this. Based on the experience I've had, especially most recently, I will never take a drink again. I'm sure of it, and I truly believe that. You know, but also in leaving that meeting, seeing Timmy celebrate a year, it truly, without a shadow of a doubt, made me believe that Alcoholics Anonymous works. I had no doubt in my mind that Alcoholics Anonymous works. If a guy like him is sober a year, this thing works. Whatever people are doing in here works. I just don't need it. And let me tell you, 3 weeks later, I was doing the same thing I was doing, you know. The reason is because I was powerless. You know, the first step talks about we admitted we were powerless. I had no more power over quitting drinking than I did over anything else. You know, being a better person, anything. You know, I didn't know it at the time, but I'm sure people in that room did. Like, it was just a matter of time before he picks up again, and hopefully he makes it back here. You know, there's a reason we're here. It's because we can't stop drinking. You know, like I said earlier, if I could have done it, I would have done it. Now, I know other people. I know, like, one of my sisters, you know, and I know she wouldn't care if I said this, you know, we used to do a lot of stuff together, and she said one day she was high as she was in her life, and she just had the realization, like, this is not the way to live, you know, she doesn't do drugs anymore, she can socially drink, she doesn't have this malady, this physical allergy and this obsession, you know, there's people out there like that, you know, then there's people like me that no matter what, I will not stop drinking, unless I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. So anyway, June of 2008, you know, I remember it was a Sunday, June 15th, I woke up, my first thought was, you told your mom and your sister you were going to help them today do stuff, you should go do that. My second thought right after that was, you should have two Budweisers before you go do that to level yourself off. Let me just tell you this, I did not have just those two Budweisers that day, I promise you that, you know. I was here, there, and everywhere, and sometime it was still light out, that's all I can really tell you. I walked in this bar called the Outpost Inn in Lake Silkworth, and it's not a classy joint. I had my last drink and drug in that bar. I didn't know it at the time. You know, I had no clue it was my last drink and drug. I didn't slam that mug on the bar and say, this is it. Didn't do that. You know, what happened is I went up there to help them thinking that would be okay, you know, and I don't know. I just remember I was pretty trashed, but my mother said to me, and let me tell you something about my mom, man. I might cry actually telling this, but most loving, caring person I know. There's somewhere in the Big Book, it says, you know, if it weren't for the mothers or wives or something, we'd probably be dead. Somewhere in there, it says something like that. I don't know that book by heart, but she stuck by me side and side. But the best thing she ever did was go to Al-Anon. This is what I heard her say, and this is what I know she said. You're out of my house, and I'm suing you for every last cent you owe me. You know, and she left. that's what I remember. And I also remember this, like, here was still an idea yet. If I just, I'll cut the grass. If I cut the grass for her, this will make everything okay. I remember that. And I also remember this. The lawnmower ran out of gas, and that's it. I ran out of gas, too. I remember just being out in the woods, kind of. She lives out near the woods, and my sister, who was still there, too, and she was the one that went to Al-Anon with my mother, my sister Jill, and she came up. She said, I'm leaving. And I just start crying. I said, I need help. I really need help. Now, I've said those words before. I need help. But I didn't mean it. You know, I've said it to get you off my back, you know, so I can start drinking a week later. But I truly meant it then. And she sat with me. And this is a girl I stole from, manipulated, you name it, you know. She sat with me and, like, she didn't know what to do. She's never been in that situation. She was calling different rehabs. I had actually had a cousin in recovery. I do have a cousin in recovery. And he's been in and out, but he's been here now for a while. And he was actually he was sober then. But, and God's already working. This is why, you know, they tell you to get numbers when you go to a meeting. When I went to those two meetings, I got one number. I got Timmy's number. And the thought popped in my head. Hey, you have Timmy's number. Call Timmy. And that's not my thought. That comes from God. And I didn't know it at the time. And by no means am I connected to God at this point. But God just sent me these gifts, you know. And so I called Timmy, answered the phone. Long story short, he led me to this guy, Jay. I believe Jay called me that night, or I called him. I don't remember. But I talked to Jay on the phone that night. And I wrote down his number. And I wrote down on a piece of paper, whatever it takes. Because I'm pretty sure he asked me, are you willing to do whatever it takes? Now, this guy, Jay, is a guy who doesn't even know who I am. Yet he's trying to help me. He said, get up, go to work, do what your boss says, call me after work. You know, and those were things that did not look appealing to me. None of them, really. Especially going to work. But even more so than going to work, calling a stranger on the phone. And, you know, but I did those things. I can say this, when I got here, and even to this day, a lot of this stuff, even whether it's Alcoholics Anonymous related or even work related or life related, I don't always want to do this stuff. I don't always want to do this stuff. Actually, most days I get up, I don't want to go to work, you know. I don't always want to go help people, but I'll do it. I need to be willing to do it. There's a difference between wanting to do something and being willing to do something. I didn't want to do any of this stuff when I got here, but I was willing to do it. There's a big difference. Because I was out of ideas. Thank God I ran out of ideas, you know. And I meet this guy, Jay, and I know a couple people know Jay. He's always says I can share his last name, Jay Kotz. Met him down on Sherman Street in Wilkes-Barre, and I'm like, what am I doing? You know, like this guy looks happy. But what he did was he immediately starts sharing his experience with me about powerlessness and unmanageability. That was from the first minute I met him, I think, you know. And that's what he did. He shared his experience with me. And he took me, I didn't know this, but he was taking me to a meeting that night. He didn't tell me we were going to a meeting. We went to this meeting called Hope in the Heights, and it was down in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. It's no longer there. I'm not sure why it's not there. I imagine people just didn't want to keep being of service there. But he took me to that meeting. I can't tell you a word that was said in that meeting or anything. Nothing. But after the meeting, I was outside smoking a cigarette with Jay, and you know, he said, you need a home group. They're having a business meeting tonight. I'm not saying you have to join this group, but go in there and see what a business meeting entails. He also said, go in there and help clean up or help do whatever needs to be done to get that meeting put away for the night. He's like, if you don't know what to do, ask somebody. And I was terrified to talk to anybody. But I just went in and did it. And I can remember during that business meeting, and I didn't notice it at the time, but somebody said something, and I was able to laugh, like truly laugh for maybe like 3 seconds. That was three moments of relief I had on day one. Now, on day one, I didn't notice that because I'm so consumed with fear. My life's over. My life sucks. I got all these problems. How am I going to ever solve them? But I had a little bit of relief on day one, looking back at it. So after that, you know, Jay, he gets me this big book, hands it to me. He says, call me every day. If you don't, you don't. If you do, you do. You know? And he also said this. He said, I'm not going to tell you not to drink because you don't know how. But you know how to read, so read the doctor's opinion. So I'm driving home, and I'm thinking, you know, is this guy trying to use some kind of reverse psychology? I mean, he's telling me not to drink. But after I thought about it for a little bit, he's like, he's right. I don't know how not to drink because I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it made sense. And what he did is whatever meeting we went to, and I watched him do this too. If there was a cup laying, he would pick it up and throw it away. You know, he told me to do that wherever I went, not just at your home group, but wherever you go. And do I do that all the time? Hell no. But that's what he taught me. You know, and I can remember this. And like I said, I just jump around, just whatever pops in my head. He took me to, I was like 2 months sober. He took me to this conference in New York, Sunlight of the Spirit. And he actually left me there by myself. Him and this guy, Sean, which I didn't like because I didn't know anybody and I was terrified. But I ended up meeting some really good people there and talking to them. And what I'm getting at is I was in the bathroom. Jay and I went in the bathroom and he was washing his hands and I watched him, like there was a paper towel on the ground. He reached down, he picked it up, threw it in the garbage. He didn't put it there. I thought about it for a minute, I'm like, just whatever, my thoughts went somewhere else. But I was in the bathroom later that night and I saw another guy do the same thing and then I got it. Like they did it, they picked it up just because it was there, you know? And I heard a lot of people say like over the years, like do these things and not like expect anything in return. I truly like that. Those people, I don't think were specifically trying to give me that message. They just inadvertently did it. You know, that's how it works a lot of times. But, Jay took me through these steps. Like I said, when he got to step two, I fought it. But he didn't tell me I had to believe in anything. He just said, are you willing to believe in something? And after a while, like out of spite almost, I just said, sure, I'm willing to believe in something. Nothing happened. And then we got to step three. And he said, you know, are you willing to make a decision to turn your will and life over the care of God as you understand them? I'm like, what the hell does that mean? And this is how simple he kept it to me. He's like, how's your life going right now? I couldn't deny that my life sucked. My life truly, truly sucked. Every which way, mentally, physically, spiritually, financially, emotionally. I mean, my life across the board sucked. He's like, why don't you just let God run it then? Like, it's so easy, you know? He's like, start writing. So he showed me how to write this 4-step inventory. Now, this is like a week sober. He has me writing this inventory. And like I said, I'm not saying you should write your inventory a week sober. This is just my experience. I don't believe those steps. Let me say it like this. I don't believe anybody should be rushed through those steps, nor do I think anybody should be held back by a sponsor or anybody else from doing those steps. It's at your pace. That's what the book says. You know, if you want what we have and are willing to go to any lengths to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. So I truly believe you decide the pace you go at these steps. I don't hold a gun to anybody's head and say, you better write that 4-step. Now, see, I'll get to that in a minute, but I used to do similar things like that to get you to try to do this because it's a good thing, you know? So I write this inventory. I had no problem writing that inventory, and I'll tell you why. There was two things I wasn't putting on it. I believe... at least I know for me, and I'm pretty sure this probably holds the case for most people. There's at least one or two things, maybe more, that, you know, we don't want to see the light of day. You know, we want to hold on to, and we don't want to let go of. And I knew they weren't going on there, so I had no problem doing that. You know, not that it was an easy thing, but it was a lot easier knowing I wasn't going to put that stuff on there. And this is, honest to God, my experience. I do this dishonest fifth step with this guy Jay up in his third floor loft. And I left there and I had a spiritual experience. Now, I didn't see white light or anything like that, but I felt something inside of me that I never felt before from any hit of acid, any tequila, anything. Like something truly changed within inside of me. Now, don't get mixed up on words here. I'm not telling you to do a dishonest fifth step, you'll have a spiritual experience. That's not how it works. This is just my experience. And I did get honest with that stuff, and I'll tell you in a minute here. But something changed. And this guy, Jay, the three things he kept telling me all along, You got to trust God, look out for being selfish, and help other people. Those are the three things he kept telling me all along. And so I go home, I do step 6 and 7, do the other part of the fifth step, meditate for an hour, you know, whether you're throwing on us the first 5 steps, no, but I'm going forward anyway. And just my experience, and thank God I didn't drink over it. And also the obsession to drink was gone, and I can't tell you when that left me. I can tell you this, though, it left me sometime between the last time I took a drink and the time I did that fifth step in that 3-week period. I was no longer, I'm not saying thinking about it, I was no longer obsessing about it. It was no longer, you know, you wake up in the morning when you're out there and all the first thought is drink, 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 or don't drink, don't drink, don't drink, 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 you know? Like, it was no longer like that. Now, I didn't wake up smelling roses every day. I still don't wake up smelling roses. Most days, actually, I wake up and my head is like a lawnmower immediately. You know, that's most days for me. Now, some days it's not, but most days I wake up and say, I don't want to go to work, and I start thinking about this or that and the other thing, and that's usually where my mind goes in the morning. But that's why I need to pray and meditate, like, as soon as I get up. Not to feel good, but just to at least level me off some. So I go out, I make some amends, and for me, my amends experience was I didn't want to do them. So I do a couple here, do a couple there, and there's actually still one person. It wasn't like anything really horrible. Like, there's one guy from that original 8th and 9th step that I owed amends to. I should probably try and find that guy. Wouldn't it be too hard to find him either? I just owe him some money and an amends. But, and then he showed me 10, 11, and 12, which we're supposed to be doing daily. You know, take this inventory, you know, moment to moment, make amends quickly when I've harmed anybody. Go to God first, though. This is what this guy Jay taught me. Like, always go to God first. Like, he's like, this is what I'm going to teach you, how to get these intuitions from God for yourself. Because he's like, I don't have the answers. I don't know what you should do half the time, you know? So that's what he was teaching me, to go to God first. And an 11 prayer meditation. And for me, when I first started praying, it felt awkward. Like a lot of things, it felt really, really, really awkward. Like, I did not want to do that. Like, it just felt like I didn't want you to catch me doing it or anything like that. Like, it was, like, weird. But now it's just a natural part of my, you know, the more you apply these principles, the more naturally ingrained they become in your soul, and it just becomes a lot more natural to do them. And then step 12, and there's actually 3 parts of that 12th step. You know, the first thing is it says I'm going to have a spiritual awakening as a result of doing this. I had that. And then it tells me to practice these principles in all my affairs, and whatever your affairs are. Not just for an hour at a meeting, look good, putting chairs away, you know, getting here an hour early. It's when I go to work, bust my chops. You know, be honest with my family, you know, all across the board. You know, and then go out and carry this message to other alcoholics. And this guy, Jay, he immediately got through me. I'm not going to say I want to do this. He threw me into these things. You know, he's like, what do you do? I remember this specifically. It was a Thursday night. I was like 3.5 weeks sober. No, it was a Wednesday night. I'm sorry. He calls me up. He's like, what are you doing tomorrow night? I said, I don't know, Jay. I'm going to go to a meeting. He's like, well, I need you to speak at the Salvation Army. And my head just went off. Like, there's no way I can do this. I'm full of fear. Like, this guy's out of his mind. I'm done with this guy. Screw it. I'll get somebody else. But the words that came out of my mouth were, okay. And if that wasn't enough, his next question was, what do you do on Saturday nights? I said, well, I go to a meeting. He's like, well, nobody's doing the General Hospital detox commitment anymore. I think you should do it. And once again, my head just goes off. All out of fear. All out of fear, like, this guy's nuts, he's out of his mind, I can't do this. The words that came out of my mouth were, okay. So I went to that, next day I went to that Salvation Army, spoke, he's like, you have the whole hour, I'm like, that's great. I got up there, I was terrified, I don't even know what I said. I spoke for 15 minutes, sat down, I said, that was the most pointless thing I've ever done in my life. You know, because I was judging myself, because I'm full of myself, you know, I'm a very selfish person. And he spoke on the, you know, the last 45 minutes and whatever. And after the meeting, a few of the guys came up and said, thank you, I can relate to that. I was like, wow. You know. So after that meeting, I dropped him off at this pool hall. And I said, about that Saturday night commitment, I'm like, are you going to help me get people for that? He's like, not my responsibility. Closed the door and got out. I'm like, what the hell? You know. And I don't know if he was doing this intentionally. He did later on tell me, eventually, he's like, if you don't get people, I'll get people for you. But I don't know if he was trying to do this intentionally or if it was God's way of doing it. But, like, I was terrified to talk to anybody. If you weren't Timmy or Jay, the people I knew, I didn't talk to you because I didn't know you. And because I'm constantly in fear of what you think about me, you see. So it forced me on a Friday night meeting. I went to this meeting called Dr. Bob's Four Group, and I had to ask people. Like, it was either ask people to go with me or go myself, and I was not going myself. So I went up and I asked, I don't know how many people. I ended up having like 7 people go to the commitment with me, you know. And see, it's the thing with fear is I need to pray when it comes to fear, but I cannot pray away a fear. At least I don't have the power to do that. I need to pray and then walk through the fear, and that's with any fear, whether it's like the example I just gave you, or going to a job interview, asking a girl out, whatever the case may be. I need to walk through that fear in order to overcome that fear. I can't pray it away. You know, the prayer is important. The prayer leads me to the point where I actually go up, take the action, and walk through the fear. Even though I'm terrified, I'm still doing it, you know. Even before I got up here, I was a little fearful tonight. I mean, there's other, like, but especially early on when I had to get up here and do this, I was terrified, absolutely terrified, shaken. Sitting there thinking, I'm going to say this, I'm going to say that, I'm not going to say this, and then sit down and be like, I should have said this, shouldn't have said that, and it's just crazy, you know, because I'm consumed with what you think about me. And honest to God, today, I can tell you, for the most part, this doesn't hold true all the time, but generally speaking, I can care less what people think about me. If you don't like me, that's okay, you know. If you do, that's great. You know, I don't need the world, I don't need everybody in the world to like me. I don't need everybody's approval. You know, it's okay if we disagree on things. That's fine. You know, we shouldn't all agree on everything, you know, I don't want to say everything. We should all agree that these 12 steps work, I think, but we don't have to agree on everything else, you know, on how to help that particular person or whatever the case may be. So I start doing these commitments and I start catching fire this thing, and I would go to my home group. I'd take any commitment I can get. First hospital, Choices, General Hospital. I had that every Saturday. Like, whatever I can do, I would go do it. Absolutely. You know, I remember going to do that General Hospital detox, and on occasion, not all the time, occasionally it would be like a Tuesday, a guy would call me, he's like, hey, this is Rich, you know, I met you at the detox, you gave me my number, will you help me, or whatever, like, can you go to a meeting with me, or whatever, I'd say, yeah. And then not only that, I would take him back to that detox on that next Saturday, and there would still be a rollover of people that were in there when he was in there, and he would be able to share his experience, which wasn't a lot in Alcoholics Anonymous, but and this is just my belief, not only was it helping him, but it was helping them. I mean, look at this guy was sitting in detox with us 3 days ago. Now he's trying to do something with his life. You know, that's powerful. You know, and I truly don't believe you need time to help people in Alcoholics Anonymous. One day. You can put a chair away too. You can be high in this meeting tonight and still put a chair away. You know, and I've actually learned from people that were getting high. Not just, oh, they're getting high, that's not what I want to do. But I remember sitting on a couch with a guy once, and by no means am I telling you to, you know, hang out with people that are getting high. But I have some power now and I can do that. And I don't judge people for doing that. And I was sitting there talking to him and I was saying this thing. I was doing something and he said, like, you're judging that person. Or he said something. I don't remember what he said, but he actually helped me. You know? I need to be willing to learn from everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous, everybody on the planet. You know, just because somebody has 7 days sober doesn't mean they can't help you. You know? They can absolutely help you. Truthfully, I believe that. It's been my experience that way. So anyway, I'm like a month and a half sober. I'm sitting outside my home group one night, and this guy, who I knew a little bit because he went to high school with me, but he was younger than me, he came up to me and he asked me to be a sponsor. Now, here's my head. My head's telling me that you cannot, absolutely not sponsor this guy. You have no business doing that. And it's all, once again, it's all fear. But then I hear this other voice in my head. It's Jay Kotz's head, or Jay Kotz's voice. And he's saying, because he used to tell me this, one day somebody's going to ask you to do this for them, you got to do it. And that's ringing over. I'm like, sure, I'll do it. You know, and he's still sober today, you know, and has nothing to do with me. Absolutely nothing to do with me. And the crazy thing is, the last drink I had was with his brother. That's even crazier. And it's actually his brother ended up hanging himself. I don't know, it was probably about 4 or 5 years ago because he just couldn't see any way out. You know, that was his way out. You know, God rest his soul. But, yeah, that guy, he did everything I didn't tell him what to do. Like, I was told, you show people what to do. And he did everything. The problem came, these next group of guys, because they weren't acting the way I wanted them to act, you know. They weren't doing this, you know. And this is a lesson I learned. I could be trying to help you and be selfish and controlling and directing. I'd be like, you better read how it works. There's a quiz tomorrow. You know, now I don't have a quiz written up. I'm not giving him a quiz. I'm just trying to get him to do what I want him to do. You know, and Jay's like, you know, you could be selfish when you're trying to help these guys. You got to watch out for that, you know. And then God forbid a family member tries, you know, is expressing interest in coming in here, that's when you really got to walk, you know, walk a thin line between trusting God and being helpful and being selfish and directing your trolling, you know. You know, and I learned, and this, my one sister, like, you know, 5-6 years ago, she said she wanted to come in here. And I handpicked her sponsor. Before she even got here, I called up my buddy Johnny Books. I'm like, you're going to be her sponsor, right? Yep. I got the women I want her to talk to that I know are into this deal. I'm giving her those numbers. And I picture it 2-3 months from now, she's helping all these girls. And guess what? She never even showed up, you know. Now, this happened recently again. Not actually, I think it was like last week, you know. And I treated her just the same as I would treat a guy in the Salvation Army, you know. With love, but no special treatment, you know. Like, here's what I'm doing. You know, I said to her, I was like, you know, I did tell her, I said, I think you drink too much and you should probably come to AA. And she's like, I'll go if you want me to go. I'm like, you need to go because you want to go and you think you need to go. And she hasn't come. And it's up to her. She knows it. She knows it's here if she wants it, you know. But anyway, like I said, those next couple guys, like, they weren't doing what I wanted to do, you know, and I'd be self-directing, controlling, and I only got a couple minutes left, but to get back, I said that there was those couple things I didn't put down in the inventory. But I would tell you, like, whoever in here has done an inventory, have you left anything off? You know that. I don't know that. You know, when I sit down and do a fist step with a guy, I have no idea if he's... I mean, there's been times where I'm like, 3 things on the resentment list, I don't think this guy was honest, you know? Probably not. Maybe so, but probably not. But, I mean, in reality, I have no way of knowing if you're truly being honest with me. You know, but what happened is those 2 things over time, like over 6 months' time. Now, in those first 6 months, I'm running around. I'm doing every commitment I could do. I'm picking up guys for meetings, sponsoring them. I'm showing up for a home group, being of service, going to meetings, praying, doing the whole, showing up for work, busting my chops. Like, I'm not perfect, but I'm doing the best I can. And all of a sudden, I'd start thinking about those things, you know. And they, as quick as they would come in, they'd go out. You know, then I would think about them again, and they would stay a little bit longer, you know, a little bit longer. And the intervals of time between the times they were coming in my head, the gap was narrowing and narrowing and narrowing. And it got to the point right here where you can't pray it away. You can't help enough guys. You can't pick enough guys up. You can't do enough commitments. It's going to eat you alive, you know. One involved in amends. I went to a meeting on a Wednesday night. I said, this is what I did. I got to make amends. Went and made amends right after the meeting. The other thing was just something embarrassing to tell somebody. You know, and I truly became free, you know. Would I have drank if I didn't get honest with that? Probably. Blow my brains out of drink. I wasn't going to suffer like that for, I mean, I tried to sweep it under the rug. It doesn't work. So the problem is you develop a God conscious, you don't get away with anything, you know. You don't get away with anything in this world. You will pay a price. Like Jay always told me, you can do whatever you want in this world, but you will pay a price. You know, so once again, I'd like to thank this group for having me. And if you're new or if you don't unsponsored, or I don't care if you got 10 years and you are struggling, like truly grab somebody after the meeting, get with doing this thing, get back on track, whatever the case may be. And personally, I'm willing to give my number to anybody here that's willing to have help or anything like that. You know, so thanks a lot.